Okay, and we are now heading over to Irish Central, Irish Voice, Irish American Magazine, and to, did he say where he is? No. And I'm delighted, actually, to welcome Neil O'Dowd, because generally we wouldn't call him at this hour of the morning. He's like, you know, he likes to doze, and, you know, well, when you get up there, you know, it's
good. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you're up. Okay.
Yeah, I have a question for you.
What?
Name three players on the Mayo team today.
No, I don't want to name three.
No. You know why? Because you don't know.
Yeah, and you
you're
do.
A phony meat supporter.
Okay, all right. Okay, smart rear ender. You name three. You don't know either. Let's move
I'm
on.
Not from Mayo.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but you're mouthy enough about Mayo.
Yeah, but name the Schlegel minor team if you want.
All right. Actually, you had an article in Irish Central, you know, during the week, and even you were a bit nervous, if not very nervous, that perhaps a bet that you made with Frank Durkin, my first cousin, and that the bet was, cheeky bugger that you are, that Ireland would be united before Mayo would
yeah,
win the
Senate. Yeah, on to that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You never know what could happen, you know.
Yeah, okay.
I asked Micheál Martin to send the army up north. He just might do it.
Anyway, no, tell us, what was the bet? Because
the bet was Frank was always, you know, when Mayo would lose, which was very often, I'd always call Frank. And he'd always start swearing and cursing and, you know, get off the phone, you idiot. Mm-hmm. And eventually I said to Frank, I'll stop calling because Ireland is going to be united before Mayo wins the All-Ireland. And he said, I'll give you a bet on that. So we have a bet. We had a bet. And Frank, as you know, was the greatest Mayo supporter ever born, I think. And I was just reading about the graveyard after the Boston Red Sox won the World Series after an 84-year wait, that everybody went out to the graveyards in Boston and left flowers and the colors of the Red Sox saying, sorry, we weren't allowed to see it. But today kind of has that feeling for Mayo. I think this is the year.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for my bet.
Yeah, well, it's worth it. And actually, we also understand that typical, of course, of Frank's partner and cousin Brian O'Dwyer. Brian has his paw out already for the 100
bucks. Yeah, he's already called. Yeah. He says he'd be round about 12:30.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, I remember Frank on days like this. What an incredible Irish guy he was. He was just the best.
Yeah.
And you'd wish well for him to be here to see it, but yeah. Of course not to be, but
he's watching from on high, and he's listening to your every word, so maybe we should switch.
I doubt very much if he's on high, given that he's from Mayo, but wherever he is, he'll do his best.
Neil O'Dowd, want to ask you about the day itself, 20 years ago today, and, you know, where you were, because, I mean, that's the question of the day. Where were you?
It is, yeah.
You know.
I think there's 2 days our generation, Adrian, will always remember, 9/11 and the assassination of JFK.
Yeah.
And both of those days, they're like they happened yesterday. I can tell you everything about those days. I can't tell you what the day after, the day before, but I remember dropping my daughter at one of these child places where Jamboree was called, and kids were playing, you know, under supervision. I remember a call, getting a call when I got back home. I don't even remember if I had a cell phone back then. I can't remember. But it was, anyway, it was Stephen Travers, my advertising guy, saying, turn on your television. And you turn on the television and there's no words to describe it. People say it was like a movie. It was worse than a movie. It was like the end of the world, because nobody knew. I mean, when the first plane went in, you thought, well, maybe. It just went in by accident. The pilot made a huge mistake. Although that didn't seem likely, because it was a beautiful day. And
day like today, actually. You know.
Day like today, exactly. And then, of course, the second plane went in. You knew right away what the real story was, and just what the consequences were going to be. I mean, I think everybody, when you saw the people coming out from downtown, coming uptown, when you saw the people gathering outside the firehouses, when you saw the people putting the names of their loved ones on the poles in any public space, seeing if anyone had seen them, you just began to get a sense of how horrific the whole thing was. Not just for the families, but for America, for the world, that somebody would hate us that much that he'd go after men, women, and children. And that's what he did. We should never forget that. This wasn't... You could excuse Pearl Harbor in a crazy way, saying that it was an attack on the U.S. military. But 9/11 was an attack against completely and utterly innocent people. And that's what made it all the worse. And I think, unfortunately, we're still living with the consequences of it, Adrian.
Yeah, we are. It for the day and for the time, it did unify America, and we got, we shelved other issues and political differences at the top of the list. What happened? Neil, because I wanted you to talk about your book, Fire in the Morning. It's the story of the Irish in the Twin Towers on September 11th, and it is a unique account of the Irish and the Irish in the Twin Towers, among others.
We all know that New York, overwhelmingly the cops and the firemen, particularly back then, or Irish-American, so you just knew instinctively that your own community was going to take a hit. But what was surprising to me was the number of people, say like Ron Clifford from Cork, who just happened to have a meeting in the World Trade Center that day, was in the meeting when a plane hit, the second plane hit. And, of course, the incredible tragedy there was his sister and his niece were on the second plane. So it was incredible sadness and incredible coincidence that right as he was making his escape, his niece and his sister were dying. And not a nice death, obviously, crashing into the World Trade Center. But I think there was a lot of stories of people who worked on Wall Street. There was a lot of stories of construction workers. There were a couple of people who got very, very lucky and escaped.
Yeah.
There were a lot of stories of Dennis Kelleher, my friend, who was on a plane, and the plane was grounded in Newfoundland, and people were told there had been some kind of an uprising in New York. But the ones I always think about most, Adrian, is the cops and the firemen, because we had just that year done an event, the top 100 Irish-Americans. As it turned out, we had honoured about 3 or 4 firemen, and a lot of firemen had come along. And, you know, we had done an event at the World Trade Center in July that year. And from that event, a man called John Berry and... I forget the name of the other gentleman. His son died. He was there. And it was personal to everybody. You knew people, I knew people. This wasn't, we think of a huge city where everybody's anonymous, but everybody felt pain that day. It was quite extraordinary. Knew somebody who had passed and really were devastated in a way that I don't think we've ever recovered. I think Afghanistan, I wrote this in the Irish Times this morning, I think the roots of Afghanistan, the roots of Trump, lie in 9/11. That's when it all changed. You know, you look at a guy like the mayor of New York, who you were very close to, who was incredible that day. He was wonderful.
Yeah.
Then he turns out to be this lately crazy right-wing lunatic, which, you know, I think something happened. Something happened around 9/11 that changed him.
Yeah.
So I think it had a profound effect of changing people, but also a long-term effect that we're still living with. I think even as close as 2 weeks ago when we came out of Afghanistan, we would never have been in Afghanistan were it not for 9/11.
Neil, you're again on your article, and yes, lead story in the Irish Times today. Sure to ruffle some feathers.
Well,
that's what you're best. That's how I knew you were up early, you know.
Yeah.
Feather ruffling seems to be your specialty. But it was who... I'd like to go back to the day itself, just briefly, for the emotions of all of us who had to wonder whether the attack on the World Trade Center, on the Twin Towers, the attack of the crash plane in Pennsylvania, and the attack on the Pentagon, was that it, or was there going to be more? The uncertainty and that sense that America, the most secure, country in the entire world, that the confidence in America, that this was a place you could go to sleep at night and wake up in the morning and be sure, that you were safe. There was a sense of, well, once we get past the disbelief and indeed the reality of what we saw in real time, there was this sense that maybe, just maybe, this was only the beginning. Maybe there were other terrorist cells at work. That was an emotion also that we don't get to talk about because of the horrific tragedy. You know, again, the 2,977 lives and the 6,000 who were injured who get somewhat lost in the count. But we were more insecure than at any point in American history.
Yeah, I think it was, they say events lead up to a single thing and then everything else leads away from it. Everything in my life in America led up to 9/11 because that was like the biggest thing. I had been in an earthquake in San Francisco and that was a pretty horrific experience. But to climb on the roof of my building, which I did, I was living on the Upper East Side, and to look down and see that black cloud and wonder at that point, maybe that's a nuclear device. Maybe that's something that's going to kill millions of people when, it spreads across to 5 boroughs and continues. It was just a moment when you realize just how fragile everything is and how the established order can break down so quickly when you have people evil enough to not care a damn about civilians or anything that normally people take into account, that they should be left alone. But I think my biggest regret about 9/11 was not really understanding, you know, or never understanding what happened. I mean, we were fighting in Afghanistan and then we were fighting in Iraq. And why were we fighting in Iraq? I don't think anyone could answer that question. And why was Bin Laden picking on Americans? We had supported him in the war against Russia when Russia controlled Afghanistan. So it was all these crazy questions. But the one thing I remember, and you know the late, great Jim Dwyer.
Yeah.
Jim called me and said, you know, he'd written a book in 1993 about the first attack on the World Trade Center. And he had always believed that they would come and attack again. And that was the scariest thing, Adrian, that they were waiting and waiting for another 18, 19 years. But they never forgot that they were going to try. And basically what they wanted was the first bomb in 1993. They were hoping it would collapse one tower into the other. And, you know, that's a kind of level of viciousness and hatred that's very hard to understand, no matter who you are.
And again, America being the most generous world, in addition to the greatest country in the world, to think that indeed the very people that destroyed life, and that wasn't just a random attack, it was designed to kill the most people possible,
yeah,
you know, in the attack.
Because you look at the Pentagon, sure, you look at the other target, you know, the whole point, the third plane was on its way to the White House when they took it down in Pennsylvania. So they would have had the Pentagon, the White House, the World Trade Center. It was an attempt, basically, to murder millions of Americans and to declare war against the United States. I mean, there's no other way to look at that kind of an attack. And I know that people say, you know, that, you know, that Guantanamo and people should be released from there. The guy who planned this attack is still in Guantanamo. And if he rots there, he can't rot long enough for me, for what he planned, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. So I have absolutely no sympathy for anyone who's talking about these poor guys still being held, especially a guy like him, when you think of what he did to people and how much people are suffering still, even today, from the consequences of what he did.
Neil, again, we are reluctant to tag and to remember and reflect on that day and to, you know, to say that this was in the name of religion, in the name of God. That's more difficult. Indeed, we have enough grief and anguish without adding that, but it, you know, the truth of the matter was, this is what it's about. It's not about power, it's not about you know, not looking to take over the world. This was just something that this was ordered by Allah, by God.
The strangest thing for me, I was just reading up in preparation for this interview. I mean, the Russians had gone into Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda were fighting the Russians. The Americans were funding Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda then turns around, just on a practical level. Why did they turn around and attack the country that was helping them? I mean, it was just beyond viciousness and beyond any rational explanation. And I think it settled for me the question. I wasn't obviously around when Hitler was around, but there is such intense hatred at times that it's very hard to understand the level of intensity and what people will do, whether it's killing 6 million Jews or, you know, taking down the Pentagon and the World Trade Center and trying to take down the White House. that takes a particular kind of evil that I had never experienced in my life, but I did very much that day.
Yeah. We also tied insult to injury. America, again, in its generosity and its acceptance of different religions, of different immigrants, ethnic groups, the helping hand that was there, we managed somehow to train pilots that, again, had to have planned this long, long, long. And where were we, and how did we not see it coming? I think that becomes a question too that still lingers with us, as if had we known it was coming, well, that would never have happened. The sense of of our being letting our guard down, all of that. That came after 9/11. At the time, that wasn't an issue, but you know.
No, you could go to the airport and get on a plane relatively simply.
Yeah.
But I think the whole reaction, as far as I'm concerned, is, if you look at it in its entirety, it was evil. It was the definition of evil, such as I've never seen in my life and never will again, that the actions they took with full knowledge that there would be men, women and children around that area and in those buildings. This wasn't a military target. This had nothing to do with anything other than, you know, an attempt to obliterate the United States. And I agree with you. I never experienced that. Why did people hate you that much? I didn't get it. I just didn't get it.
I want to return to your book, which, in fact, this was released, a year later, or even less than that. It was your account of the Irish and the Twin Towers on September 11th. Now, there have been many, many books and documentaries, on 9/11. How did you go about gathering the facts, approaching people who were much closer to the Twin Towers and that day, and do it so soon after the tragedy, the rawness of it all, as we were trying to forget? How did you and where did you get the and it is considered to be a wildly sensitive book, which takes no, it's simply one that we don't even want to understand. That was a raw period after that. Nobody wanted to talk about it. It was just grief and more grief and anger, huge anger.
Yeah, you and I would both have known right away that this would have been, of all the communities in America, would hit the Irish community hardest, because the cops and the firemen were the major victims, and the cops were about 70% Irish at the time. I think the firemen were something around 80%. So you had these two huge communities who we all knew from St. Patrick's Day and from various events, to people in our community who were cops who went down there that day. I felt an overwhelming need to try and tell their story and their family's story so that they wouldn't be forgotten. Because in the aftermath, there was a tremendous amount of talk about heroes and people who did great things. But I think there was a particularly unique contribution that the Irish made to that. More Irish Americans died than any other group on 9/11. And what I did with the book was set out to tell the stories. And strangely enough, when you talk to people who are widowed or lost a father or whatever, they were very keen to tell you about the person. They were very keen to talk about the dead father or the dead husband, because they wanted people to know that it wasn't just a number on a fireman's shield, that there was a human being, there was a person who had lived and done great work and gave his life to the idea of firefighting. And I found the widows particularly, I found them amazing in terms of their ability to talk so openly about their experience and what had happened to them since their husbands had died and what they went through. I think that it helped them a little bit. I hope it helped them a little bit to tell their story. I know that people were reading about them and caring about them in a way that they weren't just an anonymous number anymore.
And the book is, again, friends, it's a book by Neil O'Dowd, and again, Fire in the Morning, The Story of the Irish and the Twin Towers on September 11th. Neil, for those of us who actually either knew some of the victims, can you just give us a profile, as it were, of Cantor Fitzgerald, who they are, and how they seem to have the greatest number in the Irish field of fatalities?
Yeah, unfortunately, they were, you know, right above the 86th floor on Tower 1. So they were literally, the plane literally came in the window in their trading office. But Cantor Fitzgerald were known throughout the community. Particularly, we ran an event called the Wall Street 50, which actually took place at the World Trade Center in June of that year. And there was just an awful lot of Cantor Fitzgerald people at it. And, you know, I can't remember the name of the CEO, but he was an amazing guy. He did the most extraordinary work on behalf of the families left behind.
Surely did, yeah.
Yeah, and he's still doing that work. I mean, we were going to honour him last year for our Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, COVID intervened. But, you know, it was just a portrait of a firm that was very, very Irish, that really incredibly survived despite losing so many people. Rebuilt itself and basically was giving the example that you couldn't crush that spirit they had, that Irish spirit. They weren't going to give in. And in terms of, you know, today, I mean, Cantor Fitzgerald is back in business and doing very well, which is an enormous tribute to them.
Again, Neil, so many of us, and we didn't have to wait indeed for the 20th anniversary, but today is very special to many. It seems like we're talking about an event which is live or something that happened a year ago. To many others, it's the longest period in a lifetime, I think, particularly for those who lost family members or friends or loved ones. It again is, you know, a day of remembrance and reflection, and one that indeed, into the indefinite future, will be a special day with America's worst tragedy and terrorist attack. And I want to, again, thank you for joining us today, because you...
It's a pleasure, Adrian, yeah. And just to say, I know the work you did at the time and the lives that you helped the people and the families and the fundraisers you helped with. I love the fact that the Irish community just really chipped in and did their very best right after 9/11. I remember being at so many fundraisers for families and all that, and realizing we have an awful lot of heroes in our community. We don't pay them enough. Every fireman, every policeman, everybody who's out there preserving the law, they went into those buildings and they knew. This is what Ron Clifford said that really sent chills down my spine. As he was rushing out, he saw firemen rushing in. And they must have known, Adrian.
They had to know, yeah.
That there was a very good chance they weren't going to come out. But they were doing their job, and they were going straight at the fire, and they were fearless. And I think we can be very proud of them, and to hear heroic sacrifices. I know it's not much consolation to a family, but we learned there's an awful lot of heroes in New York City as well.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you very much. Okay, God bless. And friends, Neil O'Dowd there, founder and publisher, Irish Voice Newspaper, Irish American Magazine, Irish Central, and indeed numerous top-rated books. The one I would recommend, friends, is Fire in the Morning, The Story of the Irish in the Twin Towers on September 11th. 20 years ago today.